Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million.
In my high school yearbook, my superlative was most dramatic female, which in retrospect is kind of rude. But it's because growing up, I was just that obnoxious drama kid, always rehearsing lines and sappy monologues.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You took it seriously. You were upstairs in your room practicing. You loved it.
That's my mom, who endured a lot of after-school rehearsals. My first big break was Peter Pan in sixth grade, which I took very seriously. And then in high school, I went all out as Rizzo in Grease.
Yeah, I remember you singing, which wasn't your strongest.
Wow. I mean, she's not wrong. But that didn't make me any less committed to my budding career as an actress. I remember constantly Googling the phrase North Carolina acting agent or trying to become an extra on Dawson's Creek, which was filmed just a few hours from where we lived. But my mom, she was skeptical. Why do you think you didn't want me to do it? Like, seriously.
I don't know. It's a long road. It's a hard road. Then you have to pay money to get even, you know, to take your pictures, all of that. And we thought it was kind of, could be a scam.
Do you know what a momager is?
I'm guessing a mom who manages their kids' career?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Would you have ever wanted to do that?
No. Nope, that's not me.
So, as much as I lobbied for it, my mom did not groom me into a child star, even though I'm sure I would have killed it on Dawson's Creek. I'm Rima Khrais, and welcome to This Is Uncomfortable, a podcast from Marketplace about life and how money messes with it. So today on the show, we are talking about momagers, the moms who, unlike mine, decide to drop everything to manage their kids' careers and make some money while they're at it. There are the classic modern-day momager examples, like Lindsay Lohan's mom, or the ones you see on reality shows like Toddlers and Tiaras or Dance Moms. But really, there's no better case study of the ultimate momager than Kris Jenner.
I'm important. I've helped build this business with Kylie, and I'm older. I'm the mom. I deserve a little bit of respect.
Kris is the matriarch of the Kardashian clan and has been managing them since day one. She popularized the term momager, combo of mom and manager, and then eventually trademarked it so she could use it for branding. Would you call yourself a Kardashian expert?
I would.
That's Zan Romanoff. She recently wrote for BuzzFeed about how Kris Jenner turned stage momming into a multi-million dollar business. So I'm not like the biggest Kardashian consumer, but just by being a human on this planet, I know so much about them, and they fascinate me. Today, between the Kardashian kids, you've got successful beauty lines, a clothing company, a lifestyle brand, and the world's highest paid model. The family's net worth is insane, and Kris gets a 10% cut of everything. And she's, like, open about getting 10%?
Oh, absolutely. 2 or 3 years ago, Kylie Cosmetics did a Mother's Day collection called the Momager Collection. And it's and literally, like, the logo for it is a drawing of Kris, and she's wearing sunglasses, and in the lenses of her sunglasses it says 10%.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. No, this is like a thing. 100% part of their explicit branding is, like, Kris manages us and she takes money from us. As weird as Kris's 10% might feel to a lot of us, there is, in a weird way, an argument for that 10%. It's like, I have a job, I'm taking my 10%, that's all I'm taking, you know, and the rest of it is yours to do what you want with.
It's a rate you'd pay any manager, but when family's involved, the lines get blurred. Like, you start questioning whether momagers are pushing their kids because it's good for their kids' careers or for their bottom line. Really, momager is just a glorified name for a stage mom, which is a phenomenon that has been around since the beginning of showbiz.
Yeah. You know, there's not a clear delineation of when it first came to be a term, but certainly seems to have been around about as long as American popular culture. You know, as there were moms putting their kids on, like, vaudeville, you know, in vaudeville shows. Mm. And it's interesting to think about how different women working was at that time.
The height of the vaudeville era was in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Back then, less than 10% of American women were actually in the workforce, mostly as teachers, maids, or factory workers. There were few options for them, so having a talented kid and helping them land gigs was a rare chance for women to make a living. And stage moms, they got this reputation for being very extra.
Don't you dare laugh. That child is going to be a star.
That's a clip from the movie Gypsy, starring Bette Midler, who plays, you know, just a cool, chill mom.
How dare you let that rotten, untalented fat balloon block up my babies? I won't leave the stage until she does.
The movie is about the famous vaudeville stripper Gypsy Rose Lee and her mom, who actually forged her children's birth certificates to evade child labor laws. Throughout history, there are lots of examples of moms exploiting their kids.
You know, one of the big, easy examples is Ethel Gumm, who was Judy Garland's mom, who got her daughter, like, started on taking pills to keep her energy up and her weight down when she was, a young adolescent in her early teens before her studio ever did any of that.
There have also been several cases, of course, of parents mismanaging or straight up embezzling their child's money. The biggest case was back in the 1920s. Jackie Coogan was this child star who earned millions. And then on his 21st birthday, as his career was dying down, he found out that his parents had spent pretty much all of his money. So he ended up suing them, which led to a law that's still in effect today. It says 15% of any earnings has to go directly to the child's account. So yeah, stage moms have a bad reputation. But of course, they're not all ill-intentioned. A lot of times, they felt like they had to take on this role.
There's no question that sometimes women ended up trying to have their children work because if the men in their life had abandoned them, you know, if they didn't have a husband or a father to take care of them, it was like, well, someone has to work. It's really hard for me to get a good paying job. Like, a way that I can make money for my family, you know, is to maybe if my kid's a star, then we'll be able to eat. Mm. I'm not trying to, you know, it's not a good thing. Having kids work, I'm not, like, pro that.
Yeah. To be clear.
Yeah, to be clear, not pro child labor.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to look back on it and sort of see that I do think some of the sort of real antipathy that we have towards the idea of a stage mom comes from this, from just, like, deeply rooted sexism. The term stage mom is an absolute cultural byword for, like, monster woman.
Even though women today have a lot more work opportunities than they used to, there are still more stage moms than stage dads out there. Zan interviewed a lot of women who became the designated stage parent, partly because of the gender pay gap. Their husbands were making more and had steady paychecks, so it fell to the moms to drop out of the workforce and haul their kids around to auditions as their 9-to-5.
This sort of, like, sexist forces that structure the workforce to this day also affect the fact that we still have stage moms. Mm. And then anything women do, right, there's someone's going to be like, ugh, women shouldn't do that.
And I think that also, you're right, it puts women who want this kind of work in a weird economic bind where, like, we expect them to let go of career potential, but when they find ways to monetize it, we villainize them.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and it's just, there's no winning. It feels like a way out, but it just sort of, like, traps you further.
After the break, one momager gets real with me.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
So after talking with Zan, I wanted to hear what it's like to be a momager who isn't Kris Jenner. And poking online, I found this one woman named Danielle Schaefer. Danielle has four kids who are all under 12. And at one point or another, she's managed their careers as budding models and actors. I emailed her, and within an hour, she told me she can make some time.
Hello?
Hello, is this Danielle?
Yes, this is she.
Hi, Danielle. This is Rima from Marketplace. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
I am good. Are you free to talk right now?
I can talk. I'm on the elliptical, so we can talk.
Are you working out right now?
Yes, of course. I have four kids.
Oh, my God.
So I try to squeeze it in when I can. I saw your email. I was like, oh, my God, I'm sitting here complaining for the past hour about Hollywood and going to this Disney audition. And I was like, great, she'll call me and I'll tell her how I'm about to quit.
You're about to quit being a momager?
No, I mean, I would like to, but it's just a lot.
Danielle says becoming a momager all kind of happened by accident.
I have really, really good-looking children. They just are. They're just like, they're a mix. My husband is Japanese and German, and I'm Italian. So they're just really beautiful children. And I've been told that by other people, so I don't have that bias.
Okay, so how did it all start exactly?
We got a first taste of it when we lived in North Carolina at Screen Gem Studios.
Wait, and I grew up in North Carolina.
Yeah, you're kidding.
Yeah.
We lived there.
Oh, really?
For 6 years. Yeah, 6 years, 3 months, 2 hours, and 10 minutes.
You were counting it.
Yeah.
You wanted to get out of there. Danielle says one day she saw a Facebook ad asking for child actors, and the descriptions perfectly matched her 3-year-old daughter and her 4-year-old son. So she sent some headshots, and they got the roles. They ended up making an appearance in the Nicholas Sparks movie Safe Haven, and she says they loved it. Eventually, the family moved to California, and she started signing her kids up for a bunch of auditions and sending their pictures to casting agents. She also created her own social media presence, featuring her kids in sponsored content. Over the last several years, her kids have made tens of thousands of dollars, mostly appearing in catalogs and on local commercials. She says any money they make at those gigs goes straight into her children's accounts, so they can buy a car later in life or use it for college.
I just deposited a check today.
Really?
Yeah. The baby did a modeling gig.
Oh, so my God. How old is the baby?
Well, I call him the baby, but he's not the baby. He's three.
Yeah.
Listen, everyone's working in my house, even the dogs. Okay.
How are the dogs working?
They're sponsored too. So I'm a digital strategist, and I was approached by a dog company. They wanted to know if they could sponsor my dogs.
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm not kidding you. And that was like five figures. So
what?
For the dogs. Yeah.
Danielle says she's juggling managing her kids and her dog's careers with her full-time job as a digital strategist. She has her own brand called City Girl Gone Mom. She says her kids get headshots every 6 months, as well as the occasional acting classes and coaching. Would you consider yourself a momager?
I think the word, there's a stigma with that word, so I don't like the word. I wish, because I feel like I'm more of a bridge that is leading my child from one end of his world to where he wants to go instead of dictating where he needs to be. I don't think I'm your normal momager, though. We care about more about the experience.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing is, are you having fun? Because at one point, my daughter, when we were on the train going for some Cadillac commercial, she cried and was like, I don't want to do this. And that's when I was like, oh, okay, we're not going to do this anymore for you. And that was it. And that was our last audition for her, because you really have to listen. As gorgeous as I think she is and how successful she could possibly be, it's not for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for her.
But she says it is for her oldest son, Jackson. He loves acting. In fact, after she gets off the elliptical, she's going to pick him up early from school and drive him to Los Angeles for an audition with Disney. Even though she's really exhausted and debated not going, she says her son really wanted to go.
Wherever these children want to go, I'm going to be the person to take them there, because I didn't have that growing up.
my parents were drug addicts, and my mom, you know, I was raised by my grandmother who can only do so much. So for me, it's just, I'm like a little over the top. Like, I'll do anything for them.
Yeah.
Anything. I'll go anywhere. I'll go the distance.
Danielle had her own ambitions to make it in the industry, but money was always tight and she didn't get support. So she never really gave it a shot. But she says it'll be different for her kids.
I'll do anything for them. If they want to go to the moon, they're on their own.
But otherwise, you're there for them.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good luck on the audition today.
I hope
he gets it.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Okay.
Nice talking to you.
Yeah, talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
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 Talking to Danielle, it reminded me of a point Zan, the writer I talked to earlier, made in her piece about momagers. At a time when everything is about personal branding and parents are posting every second of their children's lives online, the rise of momagers seems only natural. But the thing is, there's no guarantee that being your child's business partner won't complicate your role as a mom, or that there'll be a clear path to success, even if that's the fantasy we've been sold by the Kardashians. This is Uncomfortable is produced by me, Rima Jerez, Haley Hirschman, and Peter Balanon Rosen. Megan Dietry is our senior producer. Drew Jostad is our audio engineer, editing by Sarah Kramer. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Muna Danish is our intern. Satara Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. And Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager of Marketplace. And our theme music is by Wonderly. All right, catch y'all next week. Won't go to bed till I'm legally wed. I can't, I'm Sandra D. Wait, is it really recording?
Oscar Gomez was a Chicano student activist in the 90s, a radio DJ and a rising star.
He was fire. He was charisma incarnate. Everyone had a crush on him.
He was a voice of people who didn't have a voice.
Until his sudden and mysterious death. What happened to Oscar? Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.